Looking for a place to eat that has a little something for everyone? Come to Route 1 Grill House in Saugus. The most mouth-watering dishes, such as their ribs, steak tips, seafood, and pizzas. Wash it down with their extensive martini list and large selection of draft beer. Route 1 Grill House has a private function room that accommodates up to 70 guests for any function. This is the spot for you and your friends as the weather gets warmer with their outdoor seating. Come on in to the family-owned Route 1 Grill House in Saugus, the perfect place to be.
Now, Sports Talk. While you're on the clock, this is Zulak and Bertrand.
The sports show radio host.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
No Zoe today. Yeah, my thoughts and prayers are with the Zolak family. All his friends, acquaintances.
He's sick. He's sick. Zoe's definitely sick this time, too. I think, Jim, you can agree or disagree. I think we've gotten Zoe to a point where he fights through it. He can't fight through it anymore. He fought through it last week, toughed it out. He was obviously sick. And even yesterday, I was like, Zoe, you got to go back to the doctor, dude. You're sick. The goo that is coming out of your nose is not good. Not good.
It was visible.
Oh, it was gross.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was visibly sick, and he was still here yesterday. And then he went to the doctor yesterday, and he I got to hand it to him. He's toughed it out. He's toughed it out for over a week.
Got through the Tuesday Gillette show.
Well, he's not going to call in sick for that.
No.
He's got to talk to Bill.
That's what, like a 10-minute
commute. He'd never call in sick on the head coach.
Yeah.
Right. Made it through that show. But Bert Breer is here, the MMQB. No Hardy today either. Hardy had a scheduled day off. Hardy is not sick. Zoe's sick. Beadle, Bert Breer, Tim McCone. We can figure it out for 4 hours, I believe. 617-779-0985. Bert, where do you rank the Patriots' win on Sunday this season out of their wins?
I want to say number one because I don't think it was the most challenging opponent. Like, I think the Chiefs and I don't want to say the best team they've beaten, but I think that they played the best against the Vikings. It was the most complete performance. It looked comprehensive. They looked way more together as a team. Like, there have been points this year where it seems like they're sort of figuring it out on the fly. This didn't feel like that. This felt like, all right, like, this is what we are offensively. I've brought up the comparison to 2010. That's what it looks like to me, is that it looks like it did after they traded Randy Moss in 2010, where they brought back Deion Branch, and now it was, all right, we're going to play, basically Brady's playing point guard. Everyone's live, and that's what for the first time this felt like. They're not forcing the ball to Gronk. They weren't forcing the ball to Gordon. They weren't forcing the ball to Edelman. Brady was out there using the whole field. And so I think that's who they're going to be offensively going forward now. And it looked good the way that it looked on Sunday. And then defensively, I mean, you got to hand it to the coaches. And a huge part of this has to be Bill now, right? Because we saw this happen the last couple of years where it was clear the talent wasn't really there on defense, but they figured it out as the year went on. And we gave Patricia a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
Well, now Patricia's gone. And I think Brian Flores deserves part of the credit for this, but clearly part of this is Bill. Like, a big part of this is Bill.
Well, I think he always has, like, that heavy hand, right? In the defense, isn't he always heavily involved there, no matter who it is that's sort of, you know, in charge of the defense? And Brian Flores doesn't even have the title yet. He's just the de facto defensive coordinator. But one of the things we saw Sunday was the disguising of things within the Patriots defense, which we've seen at times over the years. We saw it a lot going back a decade plus. We haven't seen that a lot recently. that credit has gone to Brian Flores. Doesn't he deserve it?
That's who they've wanted to be too. Because I remember talking to another coach who talked to Bill about this in the offseason. And like he'd seen the Patriots doing it over the last 2 or 3 years. And like he went to Bill and said, is this what you guys are thinking here? And he's like, yeah. And it basically was like the idea now, and Bill flips it every 2 or 3 years, what they're trying to be defensively.
Right.
There's changes that happen every 2 or 3 years. But the way that the team has been built over the last 3 years or so, like it was bringing in Shea McClellan, it was bringing in Kyle Van Noy, who aren't great players, but like it was, we want everyone in the front seven to look the same, if that makes sense. Like we want a bunch of hybrids. And they've always had some of those, but the idea was to load the front with hybrids. So you can't tell who's rushing, who's dropping on a consistent basis on passing downs. Like it's just, I think on Sunday you saw like the idea of what they've been trying to be. I think Jamie Collins was that type of player. Dante Hightower is that type of player. Like it's just these athletic guys who maybe aren't great at one thing, but can do everything at a passable level, which sort of allows Bill to mess with an offense in a different way. And it's funny, I was watching some of the Titans game the Titans went over the Jets, and you can see Dean Pees doing it, you know, and you can see coaches who've come through the system doing it. Detroit's done it some. Like there's just, it's like a positionless, the ideal is to play positionless defense, and it feels like that's sort of what they did against Minnesota.
Okay, and so will that continue is my question. And are they doing this because they feel they need it? Because they don't have, you know, I think over the years you assume that in order to do that stuff, you've got to have smart players. You can't, yep, can't have stupid players. You need, yep, smart players to do it. And maybe that's what attracted them to some of the guys they have on this team that are not great players, but they're smart players. And are they doing it to make up for a lack of talent? Is that what it is? They feel like they need it at this point in order to make their defense, as you know, to maximize what they have available to them. Because as you said,
yeah,
and as I've said, well, and as a lot of people have said, Sunday was a better defensive performance than what we saw against Green Bay. It was their best defensive performance we've seen this year. It was at times, for this defense, exotic is what it
was.
It was really exciting because if this continues, you know, much do they utilize it in order to sort of save some of it,
here's
if you
the
will?
Part of, the other part of it is I think Bill tested the Vikings coaching staff and the Vikings coaching staff failed to some degree. Like I think Bill saw some of the, I mean, you've seen this, there's tension on that coaching staff right now. Like there is tension because they know they're in a championship window and some of their very good players are getting a little older. And if you I know people out there haven't followed the Vikings, but like if you've paid attention to what's happening there over the last few weeks, Zimmer like hasn't just been saying internally he wants them to run the ball. He's been saying it in public, right? And it felt to me to some degree like Bill was daring the Vikings to run the ball, and they didn't run it. Dalvin Cook, who looked awesome, I thought of all the Viking players, it looked like the most physically impressive, and that's a really talented roster. Like I thought Dalvin Cook might have looked more impressive than any Viking on Sunday. He got 9 carries.
Yeah, it didn't feel like enough. He had that big run, right, early too.
And it was almost
like a 30-yard run early in the game.
And it was almost like it was almost like one of those game plans daring the offensive coordinator.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Call a bunch of run plays.
You said you wanted to run.
Go ahead. And they didn't do it. And I think that sort of played right into Bill's hands.
So it sort of rubbed those players the wrong way, is what it's done.
I think it's, yeah. I mean, it's, look, I mean, if you saw Zimmer's post-game press conference, it was there. It was like, I think someone flat out asked him, do you think you ran the ball enough? And he said, no.
And so I was fully just admitting his mistakes right after the game. I mean, I give him credit for that.
But that's the offensive coordinator. No, he's saying like the offensive coordinator.
Oh, he's putting it on someone else.
He's putting it on, yeah, because he's, that's,
he's the head coach.
I know.
You're the boss of the offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's it. That sounds like a mess there.
Yeah.
Maybe that explains why they're underachieved all year long.
Yeah.
Which they have.
Right.
They've been not nearly, you know, as good enough compared to what we thought.
Well,
they'd
I think
be preseason.
John DeFilippo's got a chance to be a head coach, right?
Yes,
a very good chance to be. His name keeps coming up. People around here might know if he's the son of the old BC athletic
director. John DeFilippo's son.
Yeah, and so, like, it's sort of the like when a when you have an assistant coach who's like going to become a head coach, you get in these situations sometimes where. Like a guy's burnishing his resume, you know, to some degree and gets cute. And I mean, you know, he came from Philadelphia. Now he's got his chance to call plays. And it just like, it feels to me like that the whole situation there is sideways.
All right. We've talked a lot about Rob Gronkowski this week. You mentioned it briefly. Rob Gronkowski doesn't look like the same player anymore. I think this is what he is going for.
Yeah.
This is it. This is what you get. This is who Rob Gronkowski
like,
is now.
I almost felt like Sunday was an acceptance of it. Did you get that feeling?
I believe that Sunday was the day, and we talked about this on Monday, Sunday was the day that you start to adjust your expectations for what he will be.
I look, it felt to me like the coaching staff, the quarterback, everyone, it felt to me like they were accepting it. The way they played offense, there was no... There was just... They weren't forcing the ball his way. Like, he was just like... I mean, they were honestly playing it the way, like Kyle Rudolph, right? The Viking, like, was a very good player the last few years. He's lost a step, right? So he can still play, but he's lost a step. So if you watch the Vikings play, the other team on the field there on Sunday, like, Kyle Rudolph's deployed like an average tight end now. And it feels to me like that's what happened with Gronk on Sunday. Like, they were deploying him like he's just a run of the mill tight end. And that's not a bad thing. You know, he's still capable of making plays and all the rest of it, but it did not feel like they were forcing him the ball in any sort of way, which to me felt like an acceptance of this is who we have right now, number 87.
And on the worst play of the day, which was the James White third down run, mm-hmm. Rob Gronkowski was the guy who was blocking the guy who ended up tackling James White. He didn't hold his block.
Yeah.
Couldn't keep it.
Yep.
Couldn't keep that edge.
Yeah.
Couldn't keep everybody protected.
Yeah.
And it was his guy. And it was a horrible play call. I hated the play call. I think everybody in the building hated the play call.
Yeah.
But it may have worked had Rob Gronkowski blocked.
Held his block.
And when have we ever questioned Rob Gronkowski's ability to block someone?
I mean, we weren't.
When does that ever come up?
Like the Jets game, like there was no argument. Like we were talking, like, and I know we talked about this last week, like what like he was bringing to the table as a receiver in that game. Like it just, you know, like the catch percentage, all that different stuff. Like, no one was questioning that, like, after the Jets game, like, his effort as a blocker. And so if that becomes a question, then there's another layer of
it. Yeah, I think there's a lot of questions there on Rob Gronkowski's future and on the Patriots going forward this season. Where do you rank the win? Bert's got it as their best win. I think it's probably their most complete best win of the year, too, regardless of opponent.
Look, I think beating the Chiefs was more impressive. Like, if you want to, like, the degree of difficulty beating the Chiefs is tougher, I think, especially because that Chiefs team kept coming. But as far as, like, where they played the best, like, I think this was it.
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter, at Zoe and Bertrand.
Bert Breer in for Zoe today. Bert, you were going to be here anyway for a couple hours.
I sure
so
was.
So we just extended you out.
Yep.
That's what we did. 617-779-0985. I'm going to warn you that Scott in New Hampshire has called a number of times. He's proposing that Scott Zolak throw his name in the hat, so to speak, for the Cleveland Browns head coaching job. He thinks Zoe would make a great...
We should, like, put together a staff.
NFL head coach. And Scott's on the line. I think he wants to run this idea by you now, Bert.
Hey, Scott.
Hey, Beagle.
Yes.
Hey, you there with Bert?
Yes, here with Bert.
What's going on?
What's up, Scott?
Zolak. Hey, hang on, brother. You're the information knowledge guru. Listen, Zolak needs to be the coach of the Cleveland Browns, offensive coordinator Charlie Weiss, and the defense coordinator, they didn't ask me that yesterday, is Rex Ryan's brother. The guy with the long, good-looking hair.
Yeah, yeah, Rob Ryan.
So Charlie Weiss and Rob Ryan are your coordinators.
Is that his name, Rob? I sound ignorant. I'm sorry.
No, no, no. You know who you're talking about, the good-looking one with the nice hair.
Yeah. No. Zolak needs to be the coach of that team. Seriously, coaching is all about attitude. I grew up in Snively Arena at UNH. I was a kid, and I watched Brickley. I watched Sweeney. I watched Jay Miller. All those guys. It's all about attitude. It's all about the locker room. And don't tell me Zolak's not the right fit for that job. Oh, man, you picked a phone up. So happy.
All right, Scott. Appreciate the call.
What do you guys think?
I'm going to get Bert's take on this. I'm going to get Bert's take on this right now. All right, Scott. Your opinion. Scott Zolak for head coach of the Browns.
Well, energy plus, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Energy plus. Motivation.
Oh, he told us the other day what he was going to do to motivate the players. He said he was going to bring back the throwback uniforms. Yep. He's going to bring back the old Cleveland Brown uniforms. He's just going to walk in with them, hold them up, and say, play ball.
Yep.
And he figured that the old uniforms would be enough to sort of get the guys
so
going.
So plus? Motivation plus.
Motivation is plus.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, he's got knowledge of the biggest rivalry they have, Steelers-Browns, big rivalry, right?
Yeah, sure.
So he's got, like, history in the region, plus.
Yep.
The one question would be durability based on the way today. It'd be the one question, right? Like,
there's no sick days in the NFL,
yeah,
right?
Like, I don't know, man. Like on a Wednesday in the NFL, it's kind of tough to bag out on work, isn't it?
I mean, with the staff of Charlie, do you think Charlie could be an NFL coordinator?
Oh, that'd be fun.
Do you think he's still got the knowledge?
Charlie and Rob Ryan, that the game hasn't passed him by?
Yeah.
Well, would Zoe be one of those head coaches that, like, like, if it didn't go well, would Zoe come in and take play calling away, like, 7-8 games in?
Probably. Yeah, I think he'd probably be one of those guys.
Yeah.
No days off! No days off!
Can't be Bill if you're taking the sick day.
Yeah, durability concerns.
Let's go to Chris, who's in the car. Hi, Chris.
Hey, yeah, no, I've been watching the Patriots all this year, and it seems like their intention is not necessarily to mask that Brady dropped a step, but they just want to prove that they can win without him. It's run the ball all the time, little screens to their running backs as opposed to using their weapons as actual weapons. I mean, they don't really throw it to Hogan, Gronk, Gordon, Edelman unless they absolutely have to. You watch the Vikings game, the entire first half, it was all Sony Michel and Burkhead and White, and then the moment that they realized that they were still tied 10-10 at the end of the third quarter, they're like, okay, we'll throw it to Gordon, Gronk, touchdown, Edelman, Gordon, Gronk. It's just when they needed to score, they did because they used their weapons as, you know, weapons as opposed to decoys.
I think as much as anything else, like, they've struggled to find an identity deeper into the season than they have in years past on offense.
Offensively, yes.
Yeah. Like, I just –
I mean, the defense had a great day on Sunday. Would you say the offense had a great day? I wouldn't.
No, but I mean, I think Brady played pretty well considering the circumstances. And, like, again, I think it's like using every weapon in your arsenal. I think we saw more of that than we have, and it didn't feel like you were forcing the ball to Gronk anymore. It didn't feel like you were forcing the ball to Gordon anymore. Those guys were making their plays within the natural flow of the offense. Which, you know, look, everything's been sideways since the start of the year, right? The first four games, you don't have Edelman. Then, you know, you get through that first month of the season. Now Gronk doesn't look like himself. Gordon comes in the middle of all of that. You're force-feeding him the ball, trying to get him up to speed. Now Hogan gets lost. You know, you get Sony Michel going, then he gets hurt. Like, it's just everything's been sort of sideways for the first 3 months of the season. And this was the first time where it was just – and maybe it was – maybe it was a sense of urgency, like, of, you know, like, hey, the defense is playing really well, and if we're not careful, we're going to blow this, you know. The offense, like, for the first time, I felt like the plays that they were making were in the natural flow of the offense. They were letting Brady go out there and play point guard. The ball wasn't being forced to one player or another player. I personally thought, like, the way they played in the second half of that game, like, that's who they need to be. And the reason I brought up 2010 was because when you lost Moss, like, it felt like losing Moss was a plus for them because Brady didn't have that in his head anymore. I got to go over there every three or four plays or he's going to disengage, right? And so then he started playing the natural flow in the offense. I think he won the MVP that year. Like, he wound up, that was the year I think he was 34 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. Like, if you can play that way, I think it's good enough. Like, with the offensive group they have, I don't think they have a superstar skill player right now. And if you can play that way, I think it's good enough. Let Brady go play point guard.
At the start of all that, you mentioned Chris Hogan, who I think is being completely written off by the team.
Yeah.
When it comes to Brady, the coaching staff, I think he's just sort of an afterthought. In fact, we played Brady talking to Jim Gray on Monday night, and he was talking about the passing game and the guys that instead of running the football, he'd rather just throw to the guys who can really run with the football. And he named every receiver but Chris Hogan.
Yeah.
Every single, even he named Dorsett. He named Philip Dorsett, who
hopefully we're at our best when I'm getting the ball out of my hands and into the hands of guys who can actually do something with it. And I got a lot of those guys, Gronk, Julian, James White, Josh Gordon, Dorsett. I mean, I got a big group that I can get it to, and they're much more dangerous with the ball in their hands than I am.
That's interesting.
Yeah. You didn't get a Chris Hogan in there. You got a Philip Dorsett, which just, again, you gotta make sure he's still on the team, right?
Yeah.
Chris Hogan.
If you don't have a roster in front of you,
last 5 games, yep. Targets for Hogan. Going back to the Buffalo game. In order, 2-2-2-2-2. It's like they've got a mandatory, give him his 2 targets a game, and then that's it. That's all you get.
Yeah.
That's all you're going to get. We're not giving you anything more. And he's caught 6 passes on those 10 targets over 5 weeks.
Right.
And he has 27 catches on
the year. Well, and I think to be
6 of which have come in the last, really 6 weeks when you count the bye. He's got 6 catches in the last 6 weeks.
And I think the balls that were going to him are going to Gordon now. Like, as an outside, an outside target. And I think a lot of people look at him and, he's not a volume guy. Like, and he was never a slot. Like, I don't know.
No, he's never true. He never was.
The idea,
they never really used him like that.
No, they never did. And there was this idea that he was a slot. And I think we all know why people thought he was a slot, right? Like,
because he fit the small little white guy mold of Patriots slot guys?
He's never been a slot. Like, he's always an outside guy. And so I think to some degree, bringing Gordon in was like, okay, like, now, like, the balls that were going to you, Chris, they're going to you, Josh.
Well, I think we maybe saw that on Sunday, too. If you saw Josh Gordon's touchdown, that's not – I don't think that's Josh Gordon at his best, you know, skill set.
Yeah.
But I was happy with that touchdown because it showed that Josh Gordon is actually grasping things.
Yep.
I mean, he found the soft spot in the zone. Brady found him, and he turned around, and he had room to run. Could have put defense on that play, guys.
You don't
– Minnesota. But you that, to me, showed he slowed down.
He sat in it.
Yeah, he decelerated, and he sat there, and he waited, and it was there for him. And that shows an understanding of things.
There was that. The other thing that stuck out about Gordon was there was that play. There was also a comeback where he caught the ball, and he broke it off and ran up the sideline, right? And those two plays, like, if you're swimming mentally, you're – like one thing you can see this with receivers. If you're swimming mentally – you're probably not going to get additional yards, right? Like, because you're thinking so much and you're just trying to get yourself in position. I'm going to make the catch, and that's good enough. And I think you saw another step with Gordon where he's catching the ball now, and it's happening naturally, and it's like, okay, I've got the ball, I'm going, you know? And so I think that that's a subtle thing that you could see on Sunday where it's now he really, like, there was something about the way Gordon played on Sunday that just, it looked more natural than it has over his first 2 months of the team.
Making your job suck just a little bit less.
This helps my emotions.
Zulak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Patriots successfully defended their home turf against Peyton Manning's Broncos. But that was just the first of 5 consecutive contests against prolific passers. New England began preparing for this midseason stretch months earlier.
We realized that you bring in Darrell Revis, Brandon Browner, myself, Chung, we felt like that stretch was the reason why we were here. And if we couldn't play well during that stretch, then, you know, it was really no point to have all these guys in a secondary and, you know, think that you were any good if you couldn't play against the best in the NFL.
McCourty's excellent play at his new position allowed New England's new cornerbacks to compete with an aggressive style reminiscent of the Patriots' 3 championship teams.
Now, those two guys are tough physical corners. It's like when we had Ty and Otis and, you know, these two guys are tough.
headlines this morning on former Patriots corner Brandon Browner. Sentenced to 8 years in prison for attempted murder.
And if you read this, just a bad dude.
He was arrested July 8th for allegedly breaking into his ex-girlfriend's home near L.A. and threatening to kill her. Police said the woman had obtained a restraining order against him. Police said Browner prevented the woman from leaving, dragged her, and attempted to smother her in a car while her two children...
With a carpet, right?
In this story, it doesn't say carpet, but yep. I'll take your word for it. I think that's been in other stories. Tried to smother her in a car outside while her two children were present and watching this. Browner reportedly then fled the residence with a $20,000 Rolex watch. Per his plea deal of no contest on the attempted murder charge, prosecutors dropped other charges, including two counts of child endangerment. Browner sentenced yesterday to 8 years in prison for that. That's just...
I know he's
a former NFL player, but here we are again with another guy who played in the league dealing with very violent behavior and against a woman. Brandon Browner.
And
bad dude.
Bad dude. And I don't think it's NFL teams or the NFL itself's fault. But it's hard not to look at these sorts of things and the way that the NFL's looked the other way on these sorts of things for a long, long time. And not make a correlation.
Do you think that this makes the league look bad, even though he doesn't play anymore?
Yeah, of course.
I think it does.
Of course it does. I mean, he's the same generation of player as Ray Rice, as Greg Hardy. Like, he's that generation of player. So, of course it does. You know, the scary thing about this is, right, like, this will fly under the radar. No one will pay attention to it, right? Like, so this sort of thing happens, which is as bad as it gets. And because he's not in the league anymore, because you can't attach him to a team, because you can't attach him to a certain market, like, you just, like this will fly under the radar. What's just as bad is how it feels to me like we've normalized these things, right? Like, we talked about this on Sunday, Beetle. Why do you think that the NFL and the Chiefs didn't do everything within their power to try and find out what happened with Kareem Hunt in February?
Why do they not do everything in their power?
Yes.
Because they had an out when the NFL said, we're taking this over. And they said, oh, okay.
I think the reason why they didn't put their full might behind it, the way they put their full might behind the Ezekiel Elliott investigation, the way they put their full might behind the Tom Brady investigation is incredibly simple. It's because it wasn't in the news anymore, right? Like, the Tom Brady thing was litigated in the media. The Ezekiel Elliott thing was litigated in the media. They couldn't run from those, okay? I barely remember hearing about the Kareem Hunt thing in February, right?
Until he was, until it came up last week with the TMZ tape, I didn't even know that it had happened.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about this Sunday pregame. I didn't remember this. I'm like, oh, Kareem Hunt was involved. I don't even remember this being, reported. I don't remember this being a thing.
So, all right.
I fully admit, I had no idea.
So what did they do? Like, here's what they did, all right? The NFL sought the tape. The Chiefs didn't. The Chiefs talked to Kareem Hunt. The NFL didn't. You're not pulling every lever. You know what you're doing, Beetle? You're checking boxes. That's what you're doing. So if something bad happens down the line, you know what? Hey, our asses are covered. We're fine.
Sure.
Like, you're checking boxes. You don't really want to know what happened. And the reason you're not that worried about knowing what happened is because no one's paying attention, right? When people are paying attention, you know what you do? You're forming committees, you're bringing in investigators.
Bringing in lawyers, you're hiring new positions within the league, you're doing everything.
Right. And this is what happens when PR guys and lawyers run the league. It's not about getting in front of problems, it's not about fixing problems, it's about crisis management.
Deniability.
Yep.
Is what it is. How much can we deny?
So in most of these cases, what you're doing is you're checking off boxes. You're saying, okay, let's just make sure that we're okay in case this thing does blow up. And so, all right, you guys go look for the tape, okay? We'll talk to the player. Oh, he denied it. The cops won't give us the tape. All right, whatever. No one's paying attention anyway, so we'll let this go. And it's like that old thing, character is what you do when no one's looking. Like, that's what this is no one's paying attention. So, you are doing the minimum to be able to say, hey, looking back at it, hey, we did ask for the tape. We did talk to Kareem Hunt. Like, we did the things that we needed to do. It's like going down a list, checking boxes.
TMZ's got more power than the league now. That's what they're admitting to. TMZ has more ability to go after and get tapes than they do. Chad is in Medford today. What's up, Chad?
How you doing?
Good.
Well, you guys are just saying, I mean, unfortunately, it happens a lot more than we hear about. And, you know, the woman doesn't go to the police or whatever. I mean, the NFL ain't made up of all quiet boys. So we wouldn't have much of a league. But on the Pats, I mean, the first half dozen, you know, games, you figure that everybody's saying, oh, we got to put up 30 and, you know, the defense. But you knew Belichick's defenses always get better as the year goes on. And I knew they would get better, and they did. But the offense, I think, will be all right as long as we get home field advantage and hold on to that second spot. Brady is not putting himself up there like he, I mean, not trying hard, but he's not saving himself for the playoffs. He'll hang in there longer when the playoffs come. But if you notice, teams now are keen on James White after watching film. And now you're dependent on Hogan because Gronk ain't Gronk. I don't know if he's fully healthy or he's just slowed down. And Edelman's coming off the thing. And I thank God for Josh Gordon. You know, now it seems like he ain't just running straight down the field. He's finding the soft zone. He's running good routes. I'm just glad they got Gordon. I hope he can stay on the straight and narrow. Thanks, guys.
All right, Chad. Appreciate the call. You know, he said something there that's interesting, which is teams have started to figure out James White and his value to the team.
Yeah.
Started to key in on James White.
Which is crazy because he's like, you think of him on paper as like a complimentary weapon, but he's actually like Brady. He's almost becoming
the security blanket.
He's Brady's like bailout guy now.
Yeah. And yeah. So I think Chad's onto something there. The other part being that Josh Gordon didn't really play a lot in that first half of the game. He wasn't really out there.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like he came on and started to play better in the second half. He just started to play, period,
yep,
in that second half.
15 snaps in the first half.
15 snaps in the first half out of a possible how many, do you know?
30 or 31.
Okay. Yeah. So he's playing half the time.
Snaps. Yep.
Yeah, but his presence was not significant. It wasn't noticeable in the first half.
And in the second half, it was pretty yes, important, yeah.
Yeah. John in Maryland. Hi, John.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Got a question for Bert. Yesterday, Felger and Maz Bedard said that Edelman was looking at his foot. Not so much a knee issue, but I think he's been listed on the injury report for foot. And I'm concerned, and he seemed to be concerned that, you know, just keeping it together and not, you know, not going out like he's done in past years with foot issues.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if they would consider taking him off punt return duties, save him a little bit for the postseason run instead of having him return punts given that situation.
I mean, they've,
tell me what you think about
that. They've done that in the past. I know that was sort of the luxury of having Amendola here, is that he had so much experience doing it, and he wasn't just a guy who would go back there and catch it. Like, who do you have that's going to go back there now?
I think he's just as able to be injured on a play where he goes over the middle. In fact, he got tackled in a weird way from behind on Sunday, where I thought he may have tweaked something, and he got up limping a little bit. I've accepted it. You know, the biggest danger back there is he gets crushed on a hit, not related to his knee or his foot, yet, you know, you get knocked out because you get hit hard on some of those plays. It's a dangerous thing to be doing, whether it be kicks or punts in this league. So you've just got to accept it at this point because you don't want to have a situation where you get someone back there who doesn't have a sure set of hands and put you at risk for fumbles and go back to Denver a few years ago. And no thanks.
Zolak and Bertrand.
Do they pose a threat?
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Asked for Towns, deflected, punched away by Marr. Smart, sitting down, goes over the shoulder with a lead pass. Kyrie returns it to Tatum. Two-hand slam and one of the highlights of the year. A fast break started by Marcus Smart, sitting down, facing the wrong way.
Oh, my God. Somebody give me a sandwich, please. Mark is on his buttocks, as Forrest would say, making a very delicate pass.
Welcome back to Zolak and Bertrand. Bert Breer in for Zoe today on the show. We welcome in the head coach of the Boston Celtics. It's Brad Stevens. Hi, Coach. What's up?
What's up, guys?
Not too much. Just trying to get by. You know, that time of year, everybody's sick. We've been talking about other teams in town, and I know that they've all sort of been battling the sickness. Have you guys been hit with that?
Oh, yeah. No, that's pretty normal. This time of the year, and then Seems like again in the later March, it always kind of comes through and goes through the whole team. But yeah, we've had more than a few come in. We keep our hand sanitizer all over this place.
It feels like over the last week, you've probably had the three best offensive games of the season to this point. What's clicking there? What's making this all go?
Well, we had our moments prior to that. I mean, I thought that we had times in each of those games where we were really good. Obviously, I think any time you make shots at the level we made shots, that's gonna make you look better. But I do think that we have a purpose behind what we're trying to accomplish. We've gotten better at some of the things that we're trying to do. Guys are getting more comfortable playing with one another. And I think that, you know, all of that added up, you know, the ball's gone in the basket a little bit more. But I do think that we have a lot of room to improve. You know, I think that we'll be asking the question about why our offense isn't very good for a long time, because the first seven games it was that bad and it screwed up the numbers. But the last 14 or so or 16 games, we're in the top 10 offensively in the league. And I think that we can continue to improve, which is encouraging.
This is probably the 10,000th time you've been asked about lineups. And
oh yeah,
and yeah, I got it
about the starting lineup and not about the middle 42 or the last 42 minutes.
No, I wanted to ask you about all lineups, not just the starting okay. lineup. Although I got the count somewhere in the 10,000 range now.
There you go.
But do you feel like you're making progress on that front in sort of figuring out all of your lineups, not just your starting lineup, but sort of your rotation throughout the course of a game?
It's all easy to come to conclusions when you're winning three games in a row. You know, I think that we have to put more than a week together before we feel like we've made you know, set in stone conclusions. I think that ultimately we've got to play well for a month. We've got to play well for 2 months. We've got to show some more consistency than we've shown throughout the first 2 months of the season. So, you know, I think that there have been some good play as of late. I think that, you know, we've had some good complementary players playing with each other, and we'll continue to explore all options until we find that consistency.
How much is this selling roles to guys too? Because I know, you know, you've obviously got some guys who are playing less maybe than they were playing at the end of last year, and I know that can be tough for a coach. I mean, how much of this is settling into roles and then selling guys on roles?
It's not for me, it's not tough from a coaching standpoint. It's tough from a playing standpoint, right? So that, and when we talk about roles, I know that it's really talking about how many minutes you're getting and when you're getting them. Your role in theory shouldn't change based on how many minutes you play. It's what you do best. It's how we want to defend. It's what you do when you're in the game. But the bottom line is when you're playing 12 minutes, those are sometimes harder to fulfill than when you're playing 32 minutes, or to feel good about it. And sometimes when you're playing less, you end up pressing a little bit more so that you can make an impact on the game in hopes of getting more minutes. And oftentimes that backfires. I think the hardest thing for any player is to play inconsistent minutes. The second hardest thing is probably to go from playing a lot to playing less. And so I think that, you know, as we continue to move forward here through this year, we can't be, you know, unaware of the fact that there are going to be tough times for guys. But at the same time, I think we're all getting a lot more comfortable in how we impact the game in a good way on both ends of the court when we're in the game. And that's the bottom line. And that's all that we can do. That's all that, you know, the guys can control. That doesn't mean it's an easy scenario for them. But I think that we've had a lot of guys that have, in this early part of the season, stepped up and said, you know, we've got to do whatever we need to do to help this team have success. And that's been helpful.
We're talking with Celtics head coach Brad Stevens. Coach, to go back to the other night, it looked like Gordon Hayward, to the untrained eye, had his best game in terms of looking like Gordon Hayward again. Do you agree with that?
I mean, the ball went in the basket, so I think that, you know, obviously people are going to react to the 30 points. He's had multiple games where he could have had 9 assists, but You know, he's always made plays off the dribble for us and off the pick and roll that have led to great shots for our team all season. He's been a good rebounder for us. So I guess the stat line would suggest that. I do think that when the ball goes in the basket like that, there's some confidence that gets built up, and then you start feeling really good about your entire game. No question it was probably his best game, but there were other games that weren't as far off as maybe a stat line would indicate. And, you know, he's feeling more comfortable day by day. I think the idea of being comfortable in the system has been just as much of a transition as the physical injury. And so I think that, you know, those two things combined have made it tough. But he's handled everything well. He's, as I said after the game, you know, when we moved him to the bench and everything else, you know, he's played at a high level, and I think that he's steadied us in a lot of cases where we needed to be steady, especially with his ball handling and passing.
So it's been a long time now since he suffered the injury, and he's been back all year. But is there still at all any sort of timeline on him, whether it be being completely comfortable within the offense or transitioning to learning things or, you know, whatever it might be? Or is it just, you know, take it game by game, day by day?
Yeah, I know that he's talked to multiple people who have gone through similar injuries, and they all say it's different, right? I mean, he's talked to high-level people who said it takes, you know, a year after you start playing to feel as comfortable and as well as you can. Some people have said, you know, it only takes a couple of months after you start playing. We have no doubt that he's going to be better, as we see, in game 20 than game 1. He's going to be better in game 40 than game 20, better in game 60 than game 40, and so on. So there is a transition there. But he has worked hard in his rehab, and I would assume that transition will be on the quicker end just because how diligent he is at working. He comes in, he works, he puts his time in, and there's frustration with not being able or not playing at the level that he did right before the injury. But there's a lot of factors involved with that. And again, transitioning to this group and being a part of this team really for the first time is a big part of it.
Was that a matter of reps then? Is that a matter of just getting him as much work as you possibly can? And maybe you have to take some lumps with him for the greater good?
I mean, obviously it's a little unique because he was on a minutes restriction all the way through the first, I think, 15 games or whatever. Yeah. So he was only playing 24, 25 minutes. He's probably played a little bit more since he's gone to the bench than he even did as a starter when you add in those times. So I think that we're just trying to win the next game. You know, like I do think that sometimes his passing and his ability to make plays for others, you know, that he has not been quite as aggressive as he could be. I thought he balanced that well in both games last weekend. And, you know, we'll see moving forward. But this is a long year, and, you know, we'll just try to do everything we can to win the next game. And I think that ultimately we've got a lot of guys that are capable, but, you know, it's how we all function together, and we're getting better in that regard, which is encouraging.
Last one for you. Where is Jaylen Brown health-wise, and do you expect him to be able to go on tomorrow night?
Good, and yes, he should be able to go tomorrow night based on yesterday's practice. He looked good. He felt good. He went through the whole practice, no issues. The only thing that would throw a curveball into that would be as if when he comes in today, if the trainers don't feel like he came out of yesterday well one day later. But we'll have our media availability after practice, so I'll be able to update on everybody after that. But I would assume he's good to go tomorrow.
All right, very good. Brad Stevens, appreciate the time, Coach. Thanks. Right,
thanks, Brad.
Thanks, guys.
Looking for a place to eat that has a little something for everyone? Come to Route 1 Grillhouse in Saugus. The most mouth-watering dishes, such as their ribs, steak tips, seafood, and pizzas. Wash it down with their extensive martini list and large selection of draft beer. Route 1 Grillhouse has a private function room that accommodates up to 70 guests for any function. This is the spot for you and your friends as the weather gets warmer with their outdoor seating. Come on in to the family-owned Route 1 Grillhouse in Saugus, the perfect place to be.